You're gonna lose that
yes,
girl.
Yes, yes, you're gonna lose that girl.
You're gonna lose
yes, that yes, you're that gonna girl. Lose that girl.
If you don't take her out tonight, she's gonna change her
she's
mind.
She's gonna change her mind.
And I will take her out tonight and I will treat her
yeah,
kind.
I'm gonna treat her kind.
You're gonna lose
yes,
that girl.
Yes, yes, you're gonna lose that girl.
You're gonna lose
yes, yes, you're that gonna girl. Lose that girl.
If you don't treat her
this week, joining us, Mike Johnson and our host, Tom Dupree, with the conversation starter, two things to do when the stock market gets crazy.
So the song there is by the Mona Lisa Twins. They're from Austria. They're kind of a cover band. It's actually a couple of girls that are twins, and they have a band behind them, and they do covers from a lot of different artists. They're big on the Beatles, and which of course this is a Beatles song, and they operate out of London. I don't know that they come to the U.S. much, but they're big at clubs in Europe, and they're good. I mean, I love listening to their stuff.
It's amazing on when people with accents sing.
Yeah, you can hear to their accent.
You can hear it a little bit, but it goes away a lot.
Well, you can hear that they've got kind of a German accent. They're from Austria.
Yeah.
So, but they're pretty interesting, and you know they have a great stage presence. And they make, and there's another band, I can't think of it. It's a couple of young girls. They're sisters. They're U.S.-based. I can't think of their name right now. They do covers also. And they do one by Eric Clapton and Derek and the Dominoes called Bell Bottom Blues that actually sounds better.
Larkin Poe.
Yeah, Larkin Poe. That's it, man. And they do a better job on that song, in my opinion, than Eric Clapton's bunch. They pull the soul out of it a little bit, whereas the original performance, it just seems a little bit stayed.
I haven't seen them live, but I've seen them play with Joe Bonamassa, and one of them plays slide guitar.
It's a cheapy slide. I mean, it's not a very expensive guitar. It looks like it was bought at Sears.
They're very good.
Yeah. Okay. Jason Zweig, who's always got timely advice for people during times of difficulty. I mean, we can give you our opinion on things. We just like to buy things that we think have value, and the market's going to do what it's going to do. But he says, Jason says, turbulent times can cause investors to make decisions they'll later regret. And in one of the quotations here, he quotes Ben Graham, who Graham and Dodd, Ben Graham wrote the famous book, I think it's called The Intelligent Investor. Ben Graham in 1963 made a speech. In my nearly 50 years of experience in Wall Street, golly, can you believe? At that point, he had nearly 50 years. I've got nearly 45 years. That's weird. I hadn't thought about it, but In my nearly 50 years of experience in Wall Street, I've found that I know less and less about what the stock market is going to do, but I know more and more about what investors ought to do. That is very profound. Go ahead.
You said it right out of the gate. The market's going to do what the market's going to do.
Yeah.
We don't know what the market is going to do. There's different layers, levels you can look at on this. The first level being not trying to, this is more of a 10,000 foot view on philosophy, which is not trying to time the market, not getting out when you have volatility, trying to get back in when you feel that things are better, just letting emotion dictate your actions. That's the top line kind of foundational thing. But then when you get into the more specifics, to your point, buying.
I made a point.
You made 2 points right out of the gate. Two, right out of the gate.
Which one are you going to?
So this one.
To one of your points.
To your second point.
Okay.
The first, it's buying good companies. Now, when you're buying a good company and you're buying it for what you believe is a fair or cheap price, the market's going to do what the market's going to do. The price of that investment could go up or down in the short run. But what you have to do as an investor is look long term. You have to go into it knowing that you can and will have volatility in the market. That's what markets do. The markets argue with participants. Market participants argue with themselves. One of the points Zweig makes in this article, and it's an interesting, it's more of a psychology thing, but it's you're arguing with your future self. So
Mike, you just had a birthday. What if for your birthday, it'd be a belated birthday present, we could like get you lunch with Jason Zweig?
That would be cool.
I'm not saying we can do it. I mean, I'm just saying, what would you think about it?
I'd welcome it.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we can work on that.
Yeah. But the point he's making when he says,
I mean, I'm not saying you got something for him or anything. It's just
it.
But it kind of does.
His points are great. I mean, come on,
like a crush or something.
No.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
It's
we
like
digress.
Every week we have a Jason.
As Jason's you were saying,
article.
Mike, please carry on.
Please carry on.
Sorry, I'm just messing with you.
The point that he is making, let's get back on here. The point he's making, when you're arguing with your future self. So he says, if you
arguing with your future self, go ahead.
In 30 years,
yeah,
would you have agreed or disagreed with actions you're taking today, based on short term volatility or noise, if you will, in the market?
All right. Now, I'm going to just jump to something that's current right now. Russia. We all know that there's been tremendous upheaval, and it may be a moot point because it looks like most of the brokerage firms are restricting or even disallowing you to purchase Russian securities. Aside from its government's actions, the stocks of these companies have been horribly punished in the market. If you were able to disassociate those companies from what its government is doing, and look at those companies as simply providers of goods and services, how could you explain and maybe perhaps account for what's gone on and how one might make a wise investment decision in Russian equities right now.
If so, let's look at some of the joint ventures. You know, BP had some joint ventures with some Russian companies.
Rosneft.
Yes. They're divesting of that. I believe Exxon and Shell also had some. There's a number of companies. You know, Apple is going to stop selling their products in Russia. Volkswagen has a plant in Germany, and they're having trouble getting the parts for the cars from Ukraine, so they're possibly going to shutter that plant in Germany. So you're having the effects from the political sanctions that have been put on there. You're having that run through all areas of the economy, from supply chain to global companies that have joint ventures there. Now, with the companies that are Russian companies, if they weren't having the sanctions put on them, you know, then you would, as an investor, say this is a value because they have, be it a goods and services or you know, a commodity that they have that they produce, refine, then you could argue that it's a value. But because of the sanctions and the potential financial crippling effects from those sanctions, that's where you have to actually tie in the political events with the business.
And it usually never happens like this, but in this case, it's different.
Right. Because some of these sanctions could cripple the companies. Now we don't know, but
it's going to affect them because of their access to capital.
That's right.
All sorts of
access to capital, access to the products that they need in producing their product. It's all drying up now. I mean, even some of the shipping companies, Maersk, and one other, they're stopping deliveries. Other than food, they're stopping deliveries to the Russian ports. So it's supplies are being cut off from Russia, physical supplies and financial.
I don't think it's fair to the people of Russia to be punished for what their political leadership is doing, because you even have situations where soldiers are saying, "Why I was not even told what we were doing." Back to this discussion of markets. You know, I can boil this thing down a little bit. Where have we known that we were making wise investments? When we, and anybody can do this, you don't have to be Warren Buffett. When we did our research, we looked around at what we were buying. We decided it looked attractive, and we realized that we had a long-term perspective on it, we would go ahead and make the investment. Was it always profitable? Yeah. No. It wasn't always profitable. There were times when we would make an investment and things would turn negative. But I'm going to mention one stock that we have bought that looked like we were going to really get in trouble on it, and it had declined quite a bit from before, and now it's gone back up again, is Kraft Heinz. And I'm not sure where it's trading today, but it looked like we were going to get smoked on it. But we bought it for the right reasons, and it's starting to make us money here.
Yeah. Well, there's a, With any company, you've got a long story and history. So we've been familiar with the Kraft Heinz story for many years. Before that was Kraft Heinz. Before those two companies,
we had it when merged. It was just Heinz.
Yeah, we had Kraft, we had Heinz, and then we sold one. Then they merged. We got the one that we sold back. Essentially, there was when the merger happened, you had new management come in. They were using zero cost budgeting, and they really mismanaged the company for several years. They didn't spend on advertising. They didn't.
This
spend
is when the Buffett backed.
The LBO, South American company,
GAM, or
it was. You asked me too quick. But anyway, they didn't spend on marketing, shelf space, and at the same time, you had online retailers being able to push new products. You had new competition coming in, and they were letting their...
Almost like the beer business.
Exactly.
You know, they had their commanding advantage, and then the little ones start eating them away.
Right. And so you've seen this play out. We sold it right after the merger several years back, and now buying it back because the share price has declined because of these things.
What did we sell at? I mean, big number.
Yeah.
In the 80s?
I believe so.
And then we got back in the 20s, right? Or low 30s?
Low 30s.
That's around 40.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's right at 40. But there's these companies go through changes. You have different management. You have different philosophies that can ebb and flow depending on things that are going on. But if the underlying business is a good business, as long as you're looking at valuations, you know what the company, you have an idea of what it's worth, and you pay attention to that, then it's an opportunity when you've had an event like what's happened the last few years and you look at the current valuation, the dividend, you take all that into account, and it looks like a good long-term holding.
Go ahead.
Similar story with General Electric. Long-time issues with that company.
It doesn't seem to want to really go down much. I mean, it'll have a shocking thing. You know, bad earnings goes down 3 or 4 points. Next thing you know, it's right back up. It's like a beach ball in a pool that you keep laying on and pushing down, and it comes out and shoots back up again.
Right.
I think that stock could do well, but you know, I'm just an investor.
But it's the story. The story has changed, but it's like anybody's life story. I mean, you look at the highs and the lows, and GE is kind of the same thing. It's had about a decade of, I mean, a long period down where the stock has had trouble. You've had mismanagement, but they're riding the ship. And when you try to right the ship on a big company, it's very hard to do, and you have to have strong leadership in there to do it.
Well, and it was a cult of personality for years, and then that personality was gone, and they had to kind of figure out what they were going to do. But the bottom line with investing is you want to try to understand the business and its franchise and its financing. It's, you know, what's it dependent upon to keep doing it? And its customer base, and its products, and its services, and all of those things you take in to your knowledge of that business and try to, it's not, I guess I said it was easy. It's not that hard, but it takes a lot of time. You got to know what to look at.
Right.
And then when you finally make an investment decision, you could still be wrong. So,
well, and you could be right, but your timing could be wrong.
That's true.
And that's why you have to have a proper horizon, investment horizon, and be able to, you know, look through short-term volatility and challenge your thesis on the holding, on the company, and constantly, continually do that. And that's the only way you build conviction in anything.
Right.
But you look even... you know, oil companies, same thing. You know, you have the commodity that's tied to it. You're talking about financing, depending on the corporate structure. If it's a REIT where they have to have constant access to capital, or if it's a partnership or MLP, you got all these different factors that go into the business model, and you have to take that into account when you're investing.
All right.
Okay, so I'm going to chew gum and walk. I'm going to start the music. And that worked. That's the end of our first segment. I am going to say that if you want a balance to your approach of your investing.
Don't come to us.
Oh, stop. You can't. I mean, seriously. Just completely busted my whole train of thought. Welcome to my world. What I was going to say is our job is to educate, guide, and empower, and we do balance. If our customers are leaning one way or the other, we're the first ones to tell you what we think, and you don't get that everywhere. You have been listening to the Tom Dupree Show, powered by Dupree Financial Group, and please remember, this everything you've heard in this first segment is not a recommendation to buy or sell. Please consult your financial professional for advice. We will be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
You gonna do? I said, ooh, ooh, child, and what you got? I said, ooh, ooh, child, and what you gonna do with them bleach blonde bottle blues? Shell pink Cadillac, cherry cola, six pack, the pop and fizz. Hits you like a hammer. She is turning heads, weapon grade legs. Seen her on the big screen, y'all. Got nothing on that. I said, ooh, ooh, child, and what you gonna do? I said, ooh, ooh, child, and what you got? I said, ooh, ooh, child, and what you gonna do with them bleach blonde bottle blues? How you gonna ride? Feel the fire like a first kiss.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show. Joining us, Mike Johnson and our host, Tom Dupree. This half the hour, we're going to talk about what a valuable employment pool ages 55 to 70 are becoming for employers, as well as our role as a fiduciary, which is sort of how we closed out the first segment, and we'll be getting to that later in the second segment. So take it over, guys.
This song is from other group. That's the girl cover group called Larkin Poe. They are from northern Alabama somewhere. Okay, trying to fill open jobs at your company. One of the 15 million retirees between 55 and 70 might be able to help. Barron's. Employers are desperate for workers in the post-lockdown economy. Wages are being raised and benefits more generous, yet finding workers remains a struggle. The most critical and widespread challenge facing business is the inability to hire qualified workers for open jobs they need to fill. Now, one of the things you're going to find with people in the 55 to 70 age group is if they have not already said, I'm out. I don't want to go back to work under any circumstances. And I have to say, if you are 55 to 70 and you think that you're going to retire till you're in your 90s on whatever your amount that you've got laid back, you might be kidding yourself, given where interest rates are and markets and things like that. So I would not necessarily say no to the idea of working. The other thing is, despite however many hobbies you may think you have, a lot of them begin to sort of give out after a year or two. You just can only play so much golf or fish so much or work around the house so much. You get to a point where you start itching to be doing something that's productive and actually makes you money. So it's something worth thinking about.
Supply and demand is an amazing thing.
Yep.
You know, that it's, you can't really argue it that in the workplace, there is this prejudice. It is harder for someone in that age group to get hired historically.
Up until now,
because supply and demand, and that's, supply and demand is an amazing force for change, because you have a demand for the service or the good, and your supply is limited. So you have to have somebody come in to do the work, and a lot of the people that retired during the lockdown, if you will, in 2020, in 2021, many of those had the mindset that this was, they call it the unretirement mindset, where they would go back to work eventually. And so they're looking at it as almost as a long sabbatical.
Couple of years off.
Yeah. And because of what's going on now, you've got better, if you want to call it benefits, you have more flexibility in a number of jobs, be it remote work or and because of the labor situation, when you come in, if you're, I'm talking to the 55 to 70 age group, when you come in with experience, that's something that a lot of places don't have any of. In the workforce, I mean, you have new people coming in. You think of the investment business. You know, how many firms have, you know, people in their early 30s. You know, we've never seen really a bear market. You've seen what happened in 2020.
There's people running companies that have never seen a bear market.
Yeah.
Especially in bonds, because you know how long it's been since we had a real bear market in bonds. Almost 40 years.
And that was going to be another point. Yeah. I'm talking to myself on that one, too, because I've never been in the investment business during an inflationary.
You don't need to tell everybody that.
Well, no.
I'm
but
just kidding you.
That's,
a bear market's a bear market, whether it's in bonds or – yeah, you haven't been in the hard inflation. We don't know if we're going to get it here.
That's right.
We've got it for the last year, but the Fed is not reacting the way it did in the early 80s. And, you know, we'll see what happens as we go forward.
But if you're 55 set to 70, or give or take, if you have experience in something, that experience can translate over to a number of different things. And your experience, your wisdom is valuable to employers right now. And, you know, If you're bored, if you're looking for some extra income right now, now's the time to get out and start looking.
Business. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's lots of firms out there looking for qualified people.
Yeah.
No, it's anybody that's got life experience that's been around for a while can translate in many ways their experiences to a variety of businesses. I just had lunch with a guy today. We've had him on the show, and we were talking about the people that they employ that sometimes have had, you know, rough things go on in their lives. They've been able to find people. Here's the thing that everybody longs to see again is someone that's grateful for the job, mm-hmm. that is happy to be able to be at a job doing something. Listen, you know how grateful I still am that after 44 years that I got a place to go, you know, that, that I haven't been fired from, that I, you know, I'm a guy who I'm grateful. I'm happy to know that we can keep doing this, that we have this place. And it makes me happy. And now I'm going to tell you something. There's people that have been in their jobs for 30, 40 years, 50. They don't like what they're doing. They're ready to get out. It's beat them up. Mm-hmm. Now this will beat you up too, but it's how you roll with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody takes blows in life. Everybody gets whapped, but how you know, that's expected, how you come up from it. And I'm just really talking to people in their 50s and 60s and 70s right now. You know, if you feel like getting back on the pony, do it. Because I'm going to tell you something. We've seen people that just pull out. It's not always real good for your health.
That's right.
Mentally and physically.
Yes. And priorities change over time. You know, when you're in your, you know, you're raising a family, I mean, it's you know, driven by money, it's driven by this, you know, the different
time.
But as you go through life, your priorities change, and it could be, you know, something that's intellectually stimulating, you know, keeping your mind sharp.
Physical conditioning, keeping exercise.
Or being involved in something that's fulfilling. You know, you can use your talents, your experience to fulfill some need. It's giving back is what it is. And it's giving to yourself too. And a byproduct of that is it's good for you financially.
So we had this situation with somebody regarding a distribution from a retirement plan. And why don't you talk a little bit about that? And given the fact that we're a fiduciary, or as one of our friends says, a feudiciary, it caused us to, you know, behave in a certain fashion, surrounding that.
So being a fiduciary, you know, I almost said fiduciary when you said that. You almost got me. There's a lot behind the word, but just to give you an example.
Say it again.
So there's a rule. It's called the rule of 55. And if you're a participant in a 401k plan, bottom line, you can be excluded from the 10% early withdrawal penalty if you're taking money from as a distribution before age 59 and a half. Now, where that plays into how a firm acts as a fiduciary, this person would have had no idea if we said roll 100% of your 401k to an IRA. Now, our compensation is based on, we charge a fee on the assets that we manage. So rolling everything over, that would equate to a higher management fee for us. Full transparency. What we did was recommend this person do a partial rollover to an IRA, leave a portion of it at the 401k because it's going to save him money in penalties. He will not have to pay the IRS in the realm of, you know, well over $10,000 over the next several years. So what we did was we foregone a management fee on a portion of the portfolio in order to help this person not pay taxes, penalties on the distributions. Being a fiduciary is you're doing the right thing by your client. You're putting your client's interest ahead of your own, even when they don't know that you are.
So when we started this firm in 2003, I'd had 25 years at brokerage firms. Brokerage firms operate under a different standard as than RIAs, a registered investment advisory firms. It's the suitability standard versus the fiduciary standard. One of the things that I was focused on was I wanted to take what I had learned about investing and investments at the brokerage firms, take that knowledge and apply it to a firm that would be way more centered on the clients and not just selling stuff. A brokerage firm is like a big store. What we are is someone who helps you locate stuff in the store you really want to buy. We're kind of like a personal shopper that's doing it for a fee, whereas the store is selling inventory for a markup. It's that simple. Different kinds of firms and businesses have different profit motives. Every now and then, you know, Congress will get all heated up. Well, they should not do this. It's what they are. You know, they're talking about brokerage firms. You know, well, they're ripping people off. No, they just simply buy it at one price and sell it at another. It's, you know, if somebody, it's caveat emptor. It's, you know, the buyer has to know what they're getting. In our case, we do the research and say, we're not getting a commission on what you're buying through us. You're actually not even buying it from us. You're buying it from our safekeeping firm, our custodial firm that we use. And we're guiding you into it without a profit motive on what we buy because we don't get a markup on it. We're hoping you're going to buy something that's going to go up in value. So our whole incentive, our profit motive is not to sell you something for a profit right away, but to profit over the long haul from our management fees that we get from the relationship that if it grows, if the value of your account grows, our fee stream grows. This takes us out of the position of having to sell you stuff every month or every quarter and worry about how we're going to get paid because we're not worried about that. It's a fee thing. Now, it takes forever to build a business like that because those kinds of relationships are very slow in developing. And once they come, usually, if you do a good job, they're slow to leave. But this business is not built overnight. It takes time, effort, patience. You remember?
Yeah. Well,
and I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. But to your point, this is why it's so important to understand the firm that you're with. Not just if you have a person that you deal with. It's important to understand the firm that you're with. Because there are some firms where you would get the advisor or the broker could get scolded or fired for not getting the full rollover of example A that we were talking about. But because of the way you set the firm up, the putting the clients ahead of our own interest, it's not only encouraged, it's expected that actions like that will take place, that we will put the interest of our clients ahead of our own. But you can only do that if the firm encourages those types of actions.
Right.
And so it's your money, I'm talking to investors, your money, it's with, you might have a person that you talk to, but you have the firm that they're with. Understand the firm's compensation model. Understand your contacts' incentives by being employed by that firm, and it's so important. And you know, I just wanted to really shine a light on that, because it's easy to gloss over who's behind the curtain, if you will, some of these places. And it's you have to know, follow the money and know what the compensation structure is, know what the incentives are, and just understand how that incentive plays with your situation.
And there are a lot of brokers at major brokerage firms that now manage the assets based on a fee structure rather than a commission structure. And many of them are fiduciaries. So you don't always just have to go to an RIA firm in order to have that type of relationship. But the overhead at those firms can be a lot higher. And I know that because I was there. And therefore, it's going to cost you more.
Well, and I've told this story before, but I have watched you, Tom, turn people away and tell them that what they were doing was just what they needed to be doing. And I'm watching them walk out the door and be like, what are you doing? But that's what you get when you come to Dupree Financial Group. You get an honest
person. Turned away.
Turned away. You get a person. He's always going to jab at me. You people realize that by now, right? No, you're going to get an honest, direct approach, and you're not going to worry. We're certainly not where Tom's coming from. He'll always let you in on that little intel. But everybody just go ahead and laugh. Just laugh.
She doesn't like to be made fun of. Not made.
Listeners, do you agree that I don't take all of this pretty well? I'm just putting that out there. If you like what you've heard and you want to hear more of the Tom Dupree Show, go to DupreeFinancial.com. He is misbehaving today, but we can. He's still a good guy, despite that. Listen, I'm going to get out of here. We appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Shell pink Cadillac, cherry cola, six pack, the pop and fizz. It hits you like a hammer. She is turning heads, weapon grade legs. Seen her on the big screen. Yeah, got nothing on that. I said, ooh, child, I want you gone.